The Vox Markets Podcast.
It's 12 o'clock. Welcome to Taking Stock. It is the 12th of January, 2024. I'm joined by John, the human. You all right, fella?
How about you doing?
And is Jackie looking quite informal? Well, no, he almost like, you know, a bit of a pilot bomber jacket. Is that new Christmas jacket?
Christmas present, yeah, it's a mod jacket.
I was going to say, I've not seen that before.
No, it's a new one.
All right, so let's have a look at the markets here. In fact, I'll go to a comment here, right, first and foremost, which I find quite funny. This is from Dave from London. This is Dave says, by the way, don't forget to hit that thumbs up button if you could, and subscribe to the channel if you haven't already, and download the Vox Markets app. It's not much for you to do. VoxMarkets.co.uk/app. Dave from London says, you've given JD Sports lots of airtime recently. I can put the accent on. Can you make way for other stocks instead? As I think this one is overdone, at least for now. Thank you. All right.
So I wasn't planning to talk about it again today.
So. Yeah, so let's go to...
Had some quite important news this week. I mean, it's fairly,
let's go to the risers. Rising today, JD Sports. Hey! Yeah, so there we are. It's the biggest rise on the FTSE 100. Sorry, Dave. We can't avoid it if it's the biggest rise in the FTSE 100. But it is one of those companies where, you know, you keep an eye on it. That's what we're saying. We're here to provide some, you know, information, entertainment, maybe, but also stock ideas maybe for future. And JD Sports, we think, is maybe one, John, that could recover in due course.
You know? I hate to use the word, but oversold springs to mind.
Yeah, okay. So sorry, Dave, we couldn't stick to that. But FTSE 100 up 0.61%, FTSE 250, 0.44%, AIM All Share 0.34. So Melrose, it's quite worrying, isn't it, what's going on in the Suez Canal? It seems a contagion happening there, you know, a little bit. How far will this go? We don't know. But I've got some graphics from the BBC, actually, worth looking at about the impact on global trade and what it means. Because, of course, there's a huge detour needed if you want to avoid that. But Melrose, Endeavour, Rolls-Royce, obviously, defence and all these kind of BAE systems are rising here. But also supply chains, procurement.
Right, and Shell's rising as well, because obviously the oil price is affected by
this. Yes. Well,
the oil price rose more on the back of the seizure of this oil tanker by Iran.
Yeah, well, exactly. So, like I say, but look at all the commodities, look. All up today. Mm. All up. What's the biggest rise? It is Brent crude up 2% today on that. So they're all up. Yeah, so... before we get into a bit more on the Suez Canal and stuff, the theme of this episode here is looking at previous winners and seeing what the qualities are and trying to find a new winner. Because we've had news out, and in fact, one of the comments today, joining the comments, everyone, Mike says, how about War Paint London today? Mm. Do you own forecasts on this one, as the broker forecasts are way out of date? Now, last time we looked at this, I did say it's a cracking company. Brilliant company. It's not cheap, though. But, you know, you've got to pay for quality. But then they come out, and again, they beat expectations. Let's just go to the news here on War Paint. And do you know what? I'm surprised. I just promised you, I'll bring these spreadsheets up, John. But even their margins look like they're improving. Because this is what they say, yeah, trading update. This is ahead of market expectations. They were expected to do 85 million revenue for the year. They're now going to do 89.5. And they say profit before tax, not less than 18 million. So I put this in, this is my spreadsheet here. And I put these into my forecast. And this is profit before tax, 18. That's a 21% margin. I don't understand that. Because it was 12% last year.
Scale.
That's unbelievable.
Scale. Bigger it gets, the better its margins get.
Yeah, so this is what I'm saying, Mike. My forecast for this, I'm basing this on, you know, and I've only given them 20% growth next 2 years, because they've done 40% this year with that. But the margins have gone up. So based on, you know, multiples of sales multiple 3, 15 EBITDA, 20 pre-tax and 25 PE, I'm looking at, say, you know, next couple of years, 70% upside. Pretty much 70%. That's what I'm thinking. And today, what is the... So like I said, before when I said, you know, those multiples are quite high, but it's a good story. It's growing very well. But when they surprise the upside, you realize there's more to come. When their margins get better and they are growing, that's twin fuels, isn't it? Twin jet propulsion there. Growth, top line, and better margins.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a ratio called the PEG, price to earnings growth.
Yeah.
So... Well, Paints Forecast PE, you know, looking at forecasts, which are probably, as the viewer says, are a little bit out of date because there's been a big upgrade today. Forecast PE was 23.9 going into today. Forecast EBS growth was 42.9. So actually, you know, on that basis, they're cheap.
Yeah. So I'm saying, basically, ultimately, 2025, even just do 20% top-line growth, I'm saying, you know, 665. That's a share. That's nearly just £4. They did bring them up £4 a day, come back down. But if they continue to do that. So anyway, the theme of this podcast is look at previous winners, see what qualities they have, like you know, war paint, and see if you can find other ones in the area. Because let's be honest, even if you, let me just take this, the 50-day moving average off here, it's a bit messy. Even if you look at the, you know, if you've been watching the story and followed the 200-day moving average and broke above that, like I said, that was at 150. That's where you want to catch them. 150, more than double, no, almost treble. But that's a good sign there. So John's come up with some screeners here, John.
Well, it's a very basic screen. I mean, it isn't looking, you know, in any depth at the company's sort of, you know, operating metrics, you know, quality metrics, margins, that sort of thing. It's just simply looking at EPS growth. And where you've got historic EPS growth, you know, you would expect that to continue. So this screen is basically looking for companies that have grown very quickly in recent years and are forecast to continue growing quickly.
So we've got two screens here. One is last 2 years and one is last 5 years, is it?
Yeah,
so, And I suppose, you know, and in fact, what's on there? We've got war paints on there.
Well, I wanted to make sure it was a screen that included war paints in. Is that what we were comparing it to?
So you've got Billington Holdings, Informer, Seplat Petroleum Development, Centaur Media, Good Energy, which I hold. In fact, is a broken hood up in Good Energy today. Mm. They've upgraded to £5 from £4.75. So Frankel Topping, Four Global. I interviewed those on the podcast a while back. Very interesting in AI. Big Blue Broadband. I'd say years ago, I interviewed them on Vox quite a few times. Galliford Try, Carn Homes, Wise, Warpaint, Ingenta. Okay, what's your pick, John? There.
I mean, Warpaint's great. A company that's popped out of that screen quite a few times is Ingenta, which as I said before, sort of it's publishing tools, content management type stuff. I mean, it's been around a long time, but seems to have reinvented itself. And as I say, it's popped out a few times. It's one that I would suggest is somewhat beneath the radar, although the shares have performed really well this year. But yeah, some really, really good growth coming through that in that business.
ING. So look, so they are 27 million market cap. They're quite a lot today. Was there any news out? No, change of Nomad, new customer wins. I did say sometimes, you know, if you can, the chance of achieving a positive return are higher if you can combine growth and value, you know, pretty much. Because if something's very highly valued and it misses estimates, then it's a big risk, you know. But sometimes you can't get that. And sometimes you have to pay up. Like Ingenta, I don't think it's particularly cheap, are they? Because I'm looking at the half-year report. So 27 million. In fact, it's not too bad.
I know, I've lost my screen.
They did 5.74 million, 9% for the half-year. Adjusted EBITDA increased by 26%.
I mean, they're not expensive.
They're not expensive.
14 times earnings. So, you know, you know, looking at the forecast rate of earnings growth, you know, that's a peg of 0.5.
Yeah.
You know, so earnings are growing at twice the rate, essentially of the PE, of the rating. So, in fact, more. So you know, that's a cheap growth share, I would say.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if you dig into it, you know, it's been a bit of a checkered history, but seems to have found its place, and growth is expected to come quickly from here.
Yeah. What else is there? There's another market cap there.
Billings has been a good one. I mean, you know, this is sort of structural steel, and, you know, there's a lot of infrastructure investment going on, and you know, obviously it stands to benefit from that. I know Billington has been, you know, on a lot of people's radar recently, but that's an interesting one.
Yeah, Frankel Topping, yeah, Galliford Try, Wise, okay.
Galliford Try, we spoke about before.
Yeah. I mean, they came on the podcast a while, they've changed the business model, and now the big contracts, you know, margins are huge. Oh, so we're going down to, this is a 5 year now. Angling Direct there, John.
Yeah.
Are you still on the hook for those?
Yeah, I am. Absolutely. Well, I mean, I tend not to dumper position is just after buying it. You know, I did have a bit more patience than that. But yeah, I mean, Angling Direct, I mean, funny enough, there's a company that recently invested in Kelso. It's had a trading update today. We'll come on to that in a minute. But yeah, you know, the 5-year history is great. But then, you know, as you would expect, the reason this looks better over 5 than 2 is because not a lot of people went out fishing during lockdown because they weren't allowed.
Yeah.
And so you know, it was a bit of a hiatus in the business at that point. But prior to that, it had been growing very quickly. A lot of cash this company's sitting on. A lot of cash and a growing market.
Okay. Anyway, so those screens are right there for you to have a look at when I publish this a bit later. So check that out. In the meantime, let's look at the front page of Vox here.
Just going back to that 5-year one, Equals. I know Equals is you know, very, very nice company. Again, you know, lots of interest in this and companies that are like Equals.
Yeah.
I think we speak to Cornerstone Financial
Services. Yeah, they mentioned Cornerstone for a few times. I mean, I covered them recently. I still think they're quite cheap. I mean, I jumped in and I got scared out of the decision because I saw lots of companies in that space saying it's getting more competitive. But I realise now maybe Cornerstone was eating their lunch, you know. They were taking a bit of share off other companies. So, Cornerstone, I mean, if you look into, you know, the metrics on it, CSFS, I can't remember what is it. Yeah. It's risen a lot. And maybe it'll have to cool off, like I said recently. But I still don't think it's, you know, particularly overvalued at all.
A lot of interest in this space. So Cairn Homes, interestingly, pops out of both screens. Cairn Homes is a house builder, obviously. Yeah. But it's slightly different from that sort of sector as a whole because Cairn is focused on Ireland.
Okay.
And in Ireland, the shortage of housing is acute, even more so than it is in the UK. So whilst it's been a horrible year for a lot of the house builders, the Irish ones have fared rather better. And it's Cairn and Glenville Properties, I think, is the other one. So. Not if you want house building exposure. And I spoke about this with Paul Hill quite some time ago now. But Cairn was the pick of the sector when we looked at that. And as I say, pops out of both screens.
Okay. In fact, no surprising. Most followed company today on Vox is Warpaint. You got Vistry as well, Greggs, Roslyn, Apdal and Bird. Canadians overseas. Do you know what? For the life of me, I can't see why people. I saw people investing that for a long time on Twitter and averaging down. I thought, why? You know, first of all, wildcat drills are hugely risky. You know, they are like, you know, 5 to 10 of one against you getting any results. And then they were issuing money bonds, and it's gone down to even today, it's gone up by 100%. But it's now only a 200 million market cap. And, you know, I think people have been taking the cleaners there massively. This amused me a little bit. UK oil and gas, successful placing. Yay! All right. And it's like 20% discount. I wonder how the sort of shareholders of that feel about having successful placings. They raised, £750,000 placing. There you are, discount 20%. just operations about upcoming drillings and workovers and all that stuff happening. Where else? Yeah, Warpaint is there. Selling Goods Directed. Selling Goods, they've changed their name. They're going for an AI thing. I did say yesterday to Vadim. Do you remember back when .com happened, John? And there was lots of AIM companies. Operations weren't that strong, didn't do a lot. They just changed the name to .com in the end, and their share price would rise. It seems like maybe it's a start of that, with some companies just changed the name to .ai in the end.
It's so funny. Yeah. You know, this week is the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. Very, very big, you know, showcase for the world's tech companies. AI is the word on everyone's lips CES, you know, everything from sort of AI mirrors that tell you, you know, your mood or what your skincare regime should be, or...
Well, that's AI, what they're doing. They're doing
AI-powered movers, you know, that can sort of detect the state of your carpet and what sort of hoovering, what sort of suction you need.
I just think this over-engineered some of it. I mean, I don't need a mirror to tell me what kind of mood I'm in. I know what kind of mood I'm in. Let's say you're in a good mood, right? And the mirror says, you are not in a good mood. I am in a good mood. No, you're not. I am. And he's not arguing with the mirror. He's not in a bad mood because I'm arguing with you.
There was a very interesting comment from a journalist I heard reporting from CES. He said, you know, actually, you know, AI is the big, big word on everyone's lips this year. Last year, it was the metaverse, and this year, nobody's talking about that. So, you know, it sort of gives you a clue as to how these trends move.
No, metaverse, I was never convinced of at all. Ever. Were you? I saw when Facebook first released their sort of graphics, it looked like a 1980s arcade game. I thought, what? That is not the future. Why do I want to dress up like, you know, a cartoon character or be a chimpanzee or an elephant talking to friends? I can't see the point of that.
Yeah.
What real life application does that have? AI has massive real life application. You know, it really can transform industries and efficiency. So I think AI is here to stay. It was always the one, I think. It just takes a while to get it working, kind of thing. And the more data you get, the better it gets. In fact, it's so scary how AI is going. But anyway, Vistry, did you see the results from Vistry? In fact, they do boast a bit here.
They were good results. Now, Vistry's got ahead of guidance. You know, their completions were down, I think, just over 5%, which is pretty decent.
I said total completions were down only 5.4%, only down 5%. And they said significantly outperforming our peers, resilience of our partnership model.
Mm. Yeah, well, the partnership model is what differentiates Vistry from the rest of the industry. They've decided to go down the route of working with partners to deliver, you know, a lot of which will be social housing. And you know, there has been some sort of skepticism towards this model, but these numbers would suggest that actually it could be the model to go down. We know that, you know, housing affordability in this country is stretched to breaking point. A lot of people can't get on the housing ladder, so you know, it remains to be seen whether this actually plays out to Vistry's advantage. But you know, in terms of what's required, I like what Vistry is doing, and this trading update is very decent indeed.
Yeah. But they got a forward sales position up 12.5% on prior year, which is quite good. Company guidance of group adjusted profit before tax, $410 million. What's the
profits are flat year on year, which is decent as well.
Yeah, $3.3 billion. Okay, but so
like many of the house builders, that, you know, they're this sort of cash position. A lot of them were sitting on a lot of cash, and it is slowly being whistled away. But
we had
nothing to worry about, really.
I do think that I keep saying that I think that they've done very well recently, house builders. I think it may have to have pulled back a little bit, because even though mortgages are coming down, it'll still take a while, you know, for people's the housing market to get back up to scratch. And like I said, look at Vistry, you know, they're not far off 2020. Well, they've put halfway down, I suppose. But
as I say, I think the business model here is it's sort of somewhat untried. So it remains to be seen how it's going to play out, but.
Yeah,
I suspect there is huge latent demand for more affordable accommodation, whether owned or rented, and this is perhaps where Vistry may have an advantage in the years ahead, especially if we have a Labour government.
Yeah. Well, I think we are going to have a Labour government. Burberry trading update here, down 9%, one of the big fallers actually. And they do say here, we are continuing to deliver the transition to our new modern British luxury creative expression for Burberry, which started appearing in our stores in early autumn. We are still in the early stages of executing this, which has become more challenging against the backdrop of slowing luxury demand.
I've no idea what that even means.
Well, it's just people not buying.
No, I know what that means. The transition to what?
A British luxury creative expression.
Yeah, I've no idea what that actually means.
That's nonsense. It is.
I thought that's what they were. They're you know, famous British luxury brand that plays on their Britishness, and our creative expression is behind the fashion industry. So you know, I don't see transitioning from what they were to what they were.
Yeah, and to me though, they seem to have the same style. I know it's quite distinctive, and it's a brand. But I haven't seen their style change for years.
That's what they are. They're Burberry. That's what makes it Burberry. It's Louis Vuitton luggage.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see though what this British luxury creative expression, how that that's changes the look of the brand. Probably doesn't at all. Maybe the check's a little bit smaller. But if you look at the Q3 2020 versus they've got Asia Pacific up 3%. I don't know which their biggest market is, but like I said, in Europe and Middle East down 5%, and America's down 15%. I don't know, you know, what is a big market for them. I don't know where they are, but it's, you know, down 15% in the Americas. That's quite a lot.
Asia-Pacific
holding up for now. Oh, there we are. Asia-Pacific is mainland China, 8%. Oh, I didn't say that. Oh, there we are. But they are saying, make some foreign exchange. We now expect currency headwind of $120 million revenue. There we are. But just got a chart.
Basically, the business is kind of split four ways. So Europe's 24%. China's 22%, US is 21%, Asia's 20%. So, you know, it's...
Oh, so that's a big hit then. America's.
Yeah, yeah, it's a big part of business. Yeah. Big part of business. Yeah. Yeah. So, fairly evenly split around the world. But, you know, the cost of living crisis isn't unique to the UK.
No. I think it's going to get worse before it gets better, isn't it? So,
although you would argue that people who buy Burberry are not necessarily exposed to the cost of living crisis.
Yeah. Well, a lot of football hooligans like it as well for a while.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah. Can you imagine the Burberry marketing department? Oh, my God. They've adopted us as a brand. Oh, my
God. They did. It was a massive concern for them.
I know, yeah. Down 56%, looked in since the high there in April 2023. Wow, in April, that's all. That's come down a long way, isn't it, in a short period of time? That's in only a year, down 56%. Wow.
War Paint is now a momentum play, until it isn't. But you know, momentum is a very powerful factor. So there's plenty of upside there potentially. And I think you've spoken about this before, that it's the lipstick effect. You know, small purchases of discretionary products.
Whereas
Burberry, obviously they're a lot more expensive, don't have momentum on their side. But you know, this is starting to move into, you know, the territory of the value investor.
It's arguing with the Mirror, LOL, short review. VTU, Cinch add another 1% as Virtu Motors. Okay. Cinch, Paul, has JW sold all of his XP? I mentioned that before, a while back. Yeah. Sorry, way too late. Because I did buy it at 7 pence, at 40 pence. And I didn't sell until 15 pence, come back down. So I could have tripled my money rather than double it. But there we are.
Just as an aside. Blimey. A dividend yield on Burberry shares is... Is that right? I need to check this. The dividend yield on Burberry shares is now over 7% for this year. So 4% next year. You get a nice dividend out of there.
Yeah, but it could drop another 6-10% easy.
Yeah, is it a value trap? Who knows? Worth a look.
Let's, John. This is a very interesting bit of graphic here. Where is it? So this is, what the Red Sea assaults mean for global trade. So you using the Suez Canal, 10,000 nautical miles, they're going from, from Taiwan, you know, and if they go around the Cape Good Hope, it's like 13,500. So 25 days versus 34 days. And they're saying 17,000 ships go through the Suez Canal each year, meaning 12% of annual global trade passes through it. That's a trillion worth of goods.
Mm.
So it's almost saying, who benefits from this? Obviously, defense and all that, but anyone in, I think, supply chains, procurement, that kind of thing, may do well, because I think it'll bring it to focus again, like when Ukraine happened, supply chain problems, you know? And the guy here said... it's inevitable that supply chains will be affected due to ships being diverted away from the Red Sea, but consumer goods will face the largest impact, according to Chris Rogers, head of supply chain research at the S&P Global Market Intelligence. No, he does not. He does note the current disruption has occurred during the off-peak season, but some people are saying this could be... And I can't see the Hutus. They seem like a raucous bunch. They don't really care. I can't see this backing down very
raucous
soon.
Raucous bunch.
Wow, they are... they don't care, do they, about inflicting pain upon themselves? They really are. You know, what's the word? I'm struggling to find a word, but they're quite a scary bunch of people. I can see this going on for ages, I think it'll get worse. They're not going to give up. They're not going to give up. Hutus.
Yeah. Well, if you remember, when the Suez Canal was blocked by that large ship that ran aground, the disruption that caused. So it does. Pose a huge threat to supply chains. Rishi Sunak today, the Prime Minister, when he was justifying the action that was taken yesterday to bomb Houthi targets in Yemen, did suggest that this was potentially inflationary, the increased commodity prices as a result of this increased price of goods. So inflation, we've already said that. I mean, I've already said, certainly, that I don't think it's necessarily going to disappear as quickly as people think. We saw some data from the US that supports that view, and the Eurozone.
Well, they're also in the last mile as artists. And the problem is, like I say, if you look at the commodities at the moment, they're all going up. And if this is a start of this kind of, spat war in the Suez Canal, it's not going to end here. You know, this is going to be the start of a run. This is... So it's a little bit worrying because, like I say, you could, central banks, you know, they can dampen down inflation or demand, you know, by bringing up the cost of living. But when you get a war going on and supply chains, you know, it's supply chain derived, that's a problem, isn't it? You know, that really is a problem. Central banks can't deal with that. You know, they can hardly deal with inflation anyway. It's a very slow, blunt instrument of interest rates, which takes a long time. You bring in supply chain constraints, there is a bigger problem there with inflation. So, and all commodities up. All has come off massively. But if you can see there, it's last 3 days, 4 days is up.
Yeah.
And so it's a little bit worrying.
We know for sure that, you know, supply side constraints were behind the recent bout of inflation. So anything that dampens supply is problematic. And that's bad for markets as well. Obviously, for obvious reasons.
But, you know, if you're sitting on the side of a bit of cash there, again, do you know what? Is it me? Before we came on, I'd just say, we are lurching from crisis to crisis. We've gone from COVID. First of all, let's go back to 2009, financial crisis, right? Where like, they put emergency measures in place, where they reduce interest rates, stimulate the economy. That lasted for 10 years, that emergency, you know, monetary policy and all that. 10 years. It wasn't a year or two. And then all of a sudden you get COVID. Ukraine, and now we've got this crisis going on. What the heck is going on? It's like, to me, it does seem like they are big issues, one after another. Or is this the normal run of things, do you think, or what?
The world has always been tumultuous. It's, you know, you look back over history, there's always been crises around the world. I think we're sort of more aware of them now. I think, media and social media has sort of amplifies these issues. I think the world is more complicated than it used to be. It's much more financialized. So you sort of get these knock-on effects that reverberate throughout the economy. And I think it's more globalized. So, you know, what happens in the Red Sea affects us here in the UK perhaps more than it used to, you know, when more of our production was at home. So I don't think it's any different from fundamentally. I don't think there's any more crises than there ever used to be. I think what happens is that those crises, because of the sort of interconnected nature of the world and global trade, that they hurt everywhere. And this is why a lot of companies are sort of, you know, been talking about nearshoring and friendshoring. It's one word they've used. You know, moving production, say, from China to Vietnam or China to India, something like Vietnam Holdings is benefiting from the investment trust. It's security of supply chains rather than cost of supply chains, which is now what's becoming more important to companies.
Yeah, well, I suppose you know people are thinking, okay, well, where do I put my money? Just sit in cash? What do I do? Well, there's one answer.
Buy good companies.
Good companies. Also benefit from this. Like I say, if you look at supply chain procurement specialists or defense, but also there's Bitcoin. Do you know what? I thought I was wrong. I thought I was wrong. I said when the ETF come out, it'll fall. It went up and come back there. It hasn't. Look at that. It's risen on. It's always better to travel than to arrive. You know that. When this flagged up a while back, the ETF, the halving, all that stuff, and then all of a sudden the ETFs come out. 11 ETFs are launched. And what does Bitcoin do? Not a lot in the last few days. You know.
Yeah, but it's done a lot. It's done a lot over the last few months. So you know,
That's what I'm saying. Better travel than arrive. That's why people don't understand when you get, you know, like war paint, for example. They give a cracking trading update. It doesn't go anywhere. Why? Because it's already travelled. It's already done the rise, you know? And that's why, you know, understanding stocks and shares about that is reading, you know, it's actually, there are clever people doing research way ahead of yourself, or, you know, and so you've got to, that's why it's worth studying the company for a long time and then realising, oh, hang on a sec, I think this could do better. And almost taking a position when, you know, the thing is, when people are all over a stock, it's pretty much too late. You know, pretty much today. When it's unloved and no one's talking about it, but you can see improvements going on, that's when you get in, and that's when you get your early fast rise.
Maybe.
And it'll continue, hopefully. You know,
maybe. I mean, I momentum. You know, go back to that idea about momentum. You know, that has some serious momentum behind it. Momentum often continues for quite some time. When people are all over stock, it means they're likely to stay all over stock. You know, until there's a sort of sniff of bad news, you know, that's going to keep going. Whereas value take, you know, value where something is unloved, where there is scope for improvement, you know, it takes a long time for for investors to regain interest.
Avoid downtrends. That's what I'm saying. So you can find an underlying stock that's downtrend has ended, but people are falling out of love with it because it's gone through a period. Everything's cyclical, you know? And like I said, the time to fall in love with this stock was down here when it crossed that turning point, broke new highs. Not many people were talking about down here, 158, you know? Not many people at all.
But is there
That was starting an uptrend there. So momentum's already there.
Are you saying, therefore, that there's no point in buying it today? Because I don't think that's necessarily the case.
I'm saying this. I'm saying the timing now. If you're just jumping into war paint, where have you been? It's literally, you know, it's done 172%. Now, and even, you know, if the margins stay improved and they do 20%, then it's another 70%. So, I want to say the big move is happening.
That's assuming you're someone who is only looking for big moves, whereas...
Yeah, I am looking for big moves.
Another way to invest is to be looking for sort of steady performance over time.
I don't want
a realistic...
I want breakneck, you know, riches coming towards me.
Excellent. You'll have breakneck losses that go with it as well, then.
That's portfolio management. That's portfolio management. Okay. If you're looking at anything like 10%, get a fund. 5-10%, get a fund. If you want over 20%, you know, 30-40-50%, you've got to get individual stocks. Look at Marks & Spencer, unloved for years. It's done 190%. It's a 5 billion. And it's come off on recent results, cracking results. They do warn about going ahead because the big run has already happened. The big move's already happened. You're too late. It was the most followed. It's like generally, you know, too late. You know, Rolls Royce, unloved. The big move's already happened now, you know. Those kinds of things. So the big moves happened there. Absolutely happened. You go, it's like, you know, Anglia Direct's a perfect example. Unloved, you know, and now you're in the right, you're in at the right time there, John, I think. And like, you know, like I said, for 2 years come down, broken 200-day moving average, moved up, you're in at the right time. It's been unloved for a long time. And now it'll start to get loved. You raise the momentum, we'll kick in with it. It'll rise, it'll create more momentum. And all of a sudden, when it's done at 150%, people will be shouting from the rooftops. Yeah. You're late. When it's 150% up here, when it's 64 pence, people are shouting about it. Too late then, but the big move's happened.
Take HVivo as another example. You know, I didn't get in right at the beginning of that move. Absolutely not. But it's still, you know, up 60-70% since I bought it. Mm-hmm. Is it going to go further? Yes, I believe it absolutely is. I believe that it absolutely will. So you know, by getting in at the beginning, was I too late? No, I wasn't. You know, if you get in now, is it too late? No, it won't be. You know, and that's what I'm saying. Catch that explosive move is only one way to invest, and it's not how most professional investors invest.
I'm saying, you know, when literally it's done the several 100%, like war pain has, people expect that to happen again, or the Marks & Spencer. It's not going to happen again. You're not going to get another 200% of Marks & Spencer's. You know, it's not going to happen.
Marks & Spencer is a very large company. War paint's, you know, 300 million market cap. So, that, you know, there's potentially, you know, a long way for that to go. It could become an enormous
company.
Every
time a company doubles, right, it gets twice as hard for it to double, pretty much. And that's why, you know, if you go back and look at the metrics on war paint, they were probably doing knockout figures back when it was, you know, 150 a share. And I missed it. And so I think might as well look for the next one now because... Mm. Not saying, you know, I mean, it'll probably do well next a few times, but I mean, to me, I want the run has been amazing.
Yeah,
you know, let's be honest.
I mean, I did buy something that is rather unloved this week, which is Focus, right? Had a little nibble on that.
I thought
I took the plunge. Shares down since.
That's it.
C'est la vie.
It's a
great company. It has, you know, unique products. The balance sheet is healthy. I spent a bit of time in the morning going through the numbers. Mm. So, do you know what? Why not? It's, you know, I like it. I like the way the company's managed. I like the way, you know, that actually a very large proportion of the company is owned by its staff. And actually, I think that's a fantastic thing.
Yeah. You know, well, I'm not joking, though. I mean, even if you're on the basic level, right, you're going to have a little bit of a, you know, comeback here because it's risen very quickly from the bottom. But it's a good, I don't know, I've got a high level, unless they come up with a horrible trading update, you can pretty much say that was the bottom here. Rallies, come back. You can see this. We have a quick rally off the bottom. Technical, big bounce because oversold massively. Consolidation, breaks 200-day move averages. Big round rally again. It has to consolidate here. But that's going to roll around and probably, you know, it may take a few months, but it's going to take back up as long as they, you know, carry on. And, people will be shouting about that then when it's like 14 quid. Yeah, it's the amazing amount of people. Whenever you see, I'm not going to mention any stocks, but you see a company being mentioned on Twitter or X, as it is, and anything mentioned about it is always positive. They get hundreds of likes, and you think, it's too crowded. It's too crowded. The best performers are when they're unloved. Really is. And there's been so many examples of that. Like I said, now, Funkstrike for unloved, you know, and people, it's not going to grow. You know, you watch. In about a year's time, people are saying, oh, I should have bought that down there.
But this comes back to, you know, which factors are the ones that create the best outperformance. And, you know, traditionally value has been that, but over recent years, momentum has been the main factor to play. So, you know, there's always ways you can look at this.
Momentum plays in all winners, but you've got to get in there before the momentum's been going for like a year or something. You know, the best returns I've ever had have been companies that are unloved and literally, you know, no one's talking about them. And in fact, I bought a company just recently, and I can see no one talking about it. Some people have given up on it, and I see some lights appearing there, and I think they're in a sweet spot, very undervalued. I'm not going to talk about it yet, but I think it's so unloved. People like, almost hate it, but and that's where you get a good return when the fundamentals are improving, the technicals are starting to kick up, and people hate it because they've lost so much money on it. But there we are. Anyway, any comments? So look, Mr. Steve, I had a chuckle when Barks went overweight on Greggs this morning. Hey! Nice. Greggs, a cracking company. But I said, again, look at Greggs, you know. There was a time when it was, a year back, it was oversold. Where were people then? You know, now it's rally business. Oh, it's a great business. Yeah, you're saying that now, but when it was oversold recently, people were. Genio, been on a run, but has it room to go? Sneaky winner. I like Genio, but again, you know, I'm too late there for me. It's not for you, maybe, I don't know, but it's just the way I invest. I prefer to find something, you know, before it moves. DG Initiative. Innovative, you mean?
DG Innovative.
Justin, was that you buying 330,000 shares? Graham, Junio, Zulu Principle, yeah, currently fits Jim Slater, Zulu Principle. Junio, does it? No, but Junio has been, we've been talking about that for months, haven't we? And I said, you know, it's too late. We've missed it. I mean, look at Junio.
Yeah.
I put those lines on back here. I said, when it breaks out, and I got an alert on that. I didn't bother getting in. And I thought the amount of news on that was phenomenal. And I should have got in. I didn't. I missed it. And to me, that's a miss. So
it's a 45 million market cap company.
Yeah, but it depends what the earnings and revenue are and growth are and the valuation now. Almost you see companies and you think that valuation's stupid. It's ridiculous. And that's when, you know, and it's unloved and it's improving fundamentally. You can see fundamentally it's improving. The margins are improving, you know, and you can see what's happening there. They've maybe had a new CEO, something come in or something's changed and they've done something and you can see it improve it. And yet the valuation is so silly. It's almost like, I hate to say a no-brainer, because I often say, if you're saying something's a no-brainer, investment-wise, you have that no-brain, because everything's got a risk attached to it. But, you know, sometimes it's close to a no-brainer. And anyway.
Journio, I mean, you know, again, like, you know, this is where I'm going to have to, you know, politely disagree.
That's fine.
You've got a 45 million market cap company here that's done extremely, the share price has done extremely well. It's doubled over the course of a year. We've forecast to double its revenues this year. It's forecast to double its EPS this year, and it's trading on a P of 13. So you know, if I would suggest going away doing research into the market and the products and the way it services its market, you know, that to me is a company that potentially has the opportunity to own this space on a you know, very wide geographic basis and grow significantly from a 45 million market cap. And you get that on a forecast PE of 13. My worry is there's a lot of borrowers behind it. So, you know, that's looking at the screen. But yeah, I think there's something's moved. But you know, I've seen so many companies that have moved. And when you look back at them years and years later, you know, that move was a small blip at the beginning. And then they've gone on to greater things.
Mm-hmm. I know that, but I just think it's a great business to go get. You know, I'm not saying you have to be clinical in your timing. I'm just saying when something's moved by, you know, a couple of 100%, and everyone's all over it, you're probably a little bit. I mean, for us, actually, if you're after, you know, 10% a year, fine, go the fund. I mean, if you want to get, you know, way above 20%, you've got to go individual stocks, and you've got to be quite good at this game, and you've got to be better than most other people because it's very hard.
You only have to be as good as you don't have to be better than anyone else. You just got to be as good as you want to be. You got to have it's not a competition.
No. What I'm saying is, I'm not saying it's competition. What it is, champion investors competition. But what I'm saying is, if you want to do well and earn more money than the average in private investors, and most private investors don't do well. They don't, but 70% lose money, you know, because they think they pay individual. Anyway, James Marlowe said, what is JW on about? If you are trying to time the market, you are a fool. Invest in good value companies with strong fundamentals. No, this thing about timing the market is an absolute myth. The market is cyclical and you can time it a little bit. You know, you can do it. And like I said, my timing was very good from 2009 onwards, the bull market. It was awful because I had a very good strategy for a bull market, but not for a bear market. And I pretty much lost half the wealth in the last two years bear market. But I made 30% last year, starting to come around again, and I got a better strategy. And so, you know, what I'm talking about, Jez, I have made a good return over the last 10 years. So I'm not just talking about my backside here, you know. So, but you can do that. And, you know, I spent a lot of time studying stocks at a molecular level on how to make money. So I'm not talking nonsense here. Anyway, Gregory, Warpaint looks a safe share for continued growth. We'll be happy with 40% over 2 years. Yeah, that's good. No, that's good return. I'm just saying, for me, I'd want to get in earlier. That's all. That's what I'm saying. When I noticed that Satya Nadella was doing a great job in Microsoft, he'd been doing it for 2 years and the stock was up. Was still a great buy.
Yeah.
Hang on a second. When you talk about Microsoft, right, you're talking about exceptional companies. These are, like, you know, globally, these are. I mean, we're not talking, you're not going to find a Microsoft on AIM. You know, you're talking about different companies. So these are billion-dollar companies.
But you can still find an exceptional company that's a leader in its niche, that has an economic moat.
Yeah, Warpaint was.
And Warpaint is. You know, that's what I'm saying. I think what we're disagreeing about is whether once something has moved, that there's still more upside. And I think that there is more upside potentially in things that have already had a good move.
James says market timing is a final one of this. Market timing is a fool's game. It's not, James. The market is all about timing. All about it. You can buy the best stock in the world at the highest price and it can go down, really overvalued, where it's been really blown out. Now, if you buy it and the timing coincides with the valuation as well. So, you know, when you see a very good company at good value, you're going to get a good return. You know, when a company has a blowout, literally, you know, like I said, for example, you've got Tesla right at the top of the market and you're a blowout. So you have to exercise a bit of timing as well, you know. It's if you just invested at the bottom of bear markets, you'd be laughing your head off. But if you invested at the top of bull markets, you wouldn't. Mm. So it is about timing. It's not a fool's game. If you think that, then you, sir.
I wouldn't go there.
don't time in the market, not time in the market. Yeah, time in the market if you're in stocks that are paying dividends. I'm talking about small microcaps that are not. They're starting their journey, you know?
Time in the market applies to capital.
It does. As far as I'm concerned, time in the market for me on my fund, yeah, I don't care where it goes. I'm putting in, you know, a monthly amount every month. It pays a dividend. And to me, I don't mind if it goes up and down. And I'll spend time, you know, next 10 years in that. But with smaller microcaps, you've got to have a little bit of timing, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, but there is, again, the time in the market versus timing the market expression comes from research into.
It comes from
missing out on the good day. So if you try and time sell and you're going to time it when to get back in, there is a risk that you miss what are explosive moves when a trend turns, and that can happen in individual stocks as well. And if you bought something and it's sold off, and you potentially, but the long term story is intact. You know, the investment case hasn't changed, but the price has. Then, you know, if you if you bail, you potentially miss the re-rating, the upward rating when it comes. That's the fundamental principle of time in the market versus time.
No, I know, but these are talking about broad indices and largely based on investing in dividend-paying stocks. This is the AIM All Share, a weekly chart of the AIM All Share. It's back to where it was basically in the last 10 years. Now, it matters with the AIM All Share because none of those companies pretty much, or hardly any of those companies in AIM,
you can't invest
dividends
in the AIM All Share as an index.
No, but what I'm saying, I know what I'm saying, exactly, that's what I'm saying, you can't. Now, the FTSE is different, right? FTSE 100. If you look at that, it hasn't really done a lot, but it doesn't matter because you reinvest dividends and you're going to get a 7.4% annualized return. Only 5%, literally, if you didn't have dividends, but it's different. The constituents are different. So I'm saying that if you're looking at constituents in AIM, you're not getting dividends. You're getting capital upside. Yeah. So you need to time it a little bit better. It doesn't matter with dividend paying stocks. If you reinvest in dividends, you aren't getting that compound growth on that. So you've got it's very silly to just a broad cliches over so many different businesses out there. And like I said, you can apply that business when they're talking about time in the market. If you look at what they're using, they are using the FTSE 100, or they are, they're using big indices to pay dividends. They're not talking about, micro caps and nano caps. It's a different kind of market, it's not that simple. I mean, certain cliches ring true and resonate, but not with, an AIM All Share indices, because it's literally you got all kinds of stuff in here, from rubbish digging dirt in Africa for the last 10 years, just raising money constantly, or wildcat oil drills. So it's you have to apply different rules. So anyway, that's all I'm saying. So quickly on GDP, did you see GDP, John?
No, I didn't actually.
It grew in November at 0.3%, better than forecast, 0.2%. But over the last 3 months, it did go down. So it shrank by 0.0%. So we got this thing where we're saying, we're in recession, are we in? We are in recession, pretty much. It's not growing. It's literally bumping along the wall. They say Black Friday saved November. So if you strip that out, where are we? And you may get a little boost in December. But let's be honest, we are pretty much in recession, aren't we?
I'm not sure I really care anymore.
No, I don't care a recession. It's true, isn't it? I mean, in my mind, it provides an opportunity. You can get some really silly cheap stocks, and
I just think we're sort of desperate stakes in the where we are in the economic cycle. It's sort of just hobbling along, hobbled.
Yeah. Sorry, Graham. Cracking passion today, J&J. That's what I love about it. It's like football, really. If you've got two teams, people are passionate about their teams or their stuff. That's why I love investing. You can get passionate about it. If I hadn't found investing, I probably, probably wouldn't be here by now. It just kept me going, really. Like the games of market timing. James, it's talking about different indices, fella. Honestly. AIM is for trading, not holding. Many lifestyle companies. That again, Gregory, is literally, it's a bit of a generalization. There are some, like I said, Warpaint, is that AIM stock? That's, investors.
I don't know, actually, I can't remember. Yeah. AIM is
tarred with the same brush.
There
are plenty of good companies on AIM. There are, but people tend to shout about the big losers.
Yeah,
which then it gives AIM a bad name,
Nichols, which is an AIM company. It's been around for 100 years. This company had a really nice trading update this week. Soft drinks maker Vimto.
Yeah,
nice numbers this week. On AIM for a long, long time. Dividend payer. I can see that. Actually, not looking cheap now, but that's done 50% EPS growth over 2 years. Nice company. There are definitely gems on AIM, but there is, as you say, there's definitely also trash.
Yeah, yeah. And hopefully, and I know it's a bad thing to say, but this downturn, where it's been really hard to raise money for companies, maybe it's a natural cleansing mechanism to clear out some of the, zombie stocks, and maybe a bit bring about a healthier indices,
That's what it should be. That's how capitalism should work.
All right. Well, so yeah, there's been a bit passionate today. Maybe I've had too many coffees with someone.
just cut things. Poor go. It's silly. Yeah. I thought it was worth a look today.
Oh yeah. That was interesting, wasn't it? So this is quite surprising. This is quite cutting edge you know, you know, like I say, an aim again. What is it? What is it? 29 million market cap is down today on that news.
Yes, is it? It was flat when I looked at it, but I think this is quite a good bit of news. Well, it's certainly an interesting bit of news. Post-quantum crypto accelerator. You know, just sort of going back to crypto and Bitcoin for a bit. One of the big threats to crypto, or one of the perceived threats, is quantum computing, which is believed to could disrupt the mining model and also disrupt the cryptography that actually makes the whole thing work, makes it secure. So actually, in silica's, you know, this is a very, it seems like a very, very positive development here that might actually, again, sort of further legitimize blockchain and crypto. And in silica's case, this is sort of intellectual property that it can sell on to other chip designers. So I think it's good news for this company, little company.
Oddly, when Paul talked about Sondrell a while back, he took a position in Sondrell, which has obviously gone very bad for him, and that can happen. Like I said, I looked at Insilica as well. I think I preferred Insilica to Sondrell.
Yeah, so
that's had a bit of a hard time as well.
Had a hard time, but you know, sometimes it only takes one product development leap and it can change the whole picture for a company, particularly in this industry, in tech. Having a notice of Premier Miton, for Little Fund Management Group.
Oh yeah, no, I've been watching these because I want to get an asset manager on board. I want to invest in asset management. I think with market turns,
it's essentially going to a leverage play on a market recovery. Yeah. And those shares were up quite sharp this day. And again, if you going back to your unloved theory, this is an unloved sector.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, most of these, which will a rising tide, they'll go with the market, you know, and like you say, almost a leverage play on the market. So,
Be a nice upward move in this sector when a recovery really does start to sit in, although I'm not sure when that will be.
There's still outflow. This is to December, so a little bit so 200 million.
Watch the flows when that starts to turn, and you know,
this is a
sector that could be worth a look.
Marvelous stuff. Thanks everyone for tuning in. It's been very interesting. Connor is a major risk to banks, insurers, and many others. That's what Steve says. Mm. Graham M. Burfordshire, 6 billion. Yeah, Burford, one of the biggest on AIM. The trouble is, the problem is when people lose money, they shout about it, rightly so. And then they highlight the companies that are normally on AIM, you know, but there are some good quality companies on AIM. You know, there are. You just have to search for them a little bit. And, there we are. Marvellous. Thanks, everyone. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button if you like the content, the feisty content here on the channel, and hit that thumbs up button if you could. And don't forget, download the Vox Markets app. It's free, free of charge. Gift to you. voxmarkets.co.uk/app. Cheers, John. Speak to you next week.
Have a good weekend.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.